Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
Your personal information is not secure, unless you're living like Henry David Thoreau, which is to say off the grid and in the 19th century. It is likely that somebody somewhere knows more about your life and your finances than you would like. This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd. It's disturbing to consider as we dig more often than usual into our wallets this season. But while it's nearly impossible to participate in the modern economy and avoid identity theft altogether, my guest says there are many things we can do to minimize the risk and repair the damage before it's catastrophic. Adam Levin is a consumer advocate and founder of Identity Theft 911. His new book is called Swiped: How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. Adam, welcome to Think.
Chris, thank you for having me.
So identity theft is inevitable in the 21st century. We will all get hit?
Unfortunately, I believe that it really is. And that's because breaches have become the third certainty in life. And this has created a new paradigm. And that is that because a billion files, think Dr. Evil with the pinky to the lips, a billion files or more containing personal identifiable information have been exposed to people who have absolutely no right, reason, or rhyme to be crawling through those files. And as a result, each and every one of us will be a victim of some form of identity theft, perhaps multiple forms of identity theft during our lifetimes.
Sometimes people ask the question, you know, if my bank account itself is safe, who cares about my other data?
Well, now, this brings up an interesting conversation. And that is, you know, when you say the word portfolio, the normal Pavlovian response is investments. But what people don't understand is you have two other portfolios, at least. One is your credit, one is your identity. And just as much as you would hope that someone would professionally manage your investments, you have to be the professional manager of your credit portfolio and your identity portfolio. You have to build them, nurture them, manage them, and protect them. And the problem is that if any one of those three portfolios is compromised, it will weaken and perhaps destroy the other two. So as a result, you can't just say, my money is safe, because if your credit's not safe, you're going to have to use the money that you were hoping you didn't have to use. And if your identity is not safe, it could mess up your credit. It could force you to drain your investment accounts. So everything is really tied together. Just as the world we live in is interconnected and globalized, so are all of the portfolios in our lives.
If your house is robbed or your wallet is stolen, it doesn't take long at all to realize what's happened. It's disturbing to think somebody can have and use our data for a long time before we even realize it, if we realize it at all.
Well, that's the real problem, is that identity thieves have become so sophisticated, and identity theft has become, in many cases, so complicated, because we're not just talking about, did somebody open new accounts in our name? I mean, the old days was just, did somebody get a credit card or debit card that they compromised? They took over the account. You know, you make a phone call, you change a number, you're fine. And you normally know pretty quickly because you see the activity in your accounts. The issue, however, is that when you're talking about criminal identity theft, medical identity theft, child identity theft, tax-related identity theft, it could take you a while to find out. And the problem is that once you do find out, you could well be so in the soup that you're in need a professional to get you through it. So the key thing is quicker detection and then having a damage control program on top of the concept of minimizing your risk of exposure, because you can do everything right. And we can go through the list, and I'm sure we will, of all the things that you should do. But if you're on the wrong database at the wrong moment and the wrong person gains unauthorized access, and in particular, if your Social Security information is in that database, you're going to be looking over your shoulder for the rest of your life.
I like to think that I'm on top of these things, but I have to tell you, I knew nothing about the potential for medical identity theft until I read this book.
No, really. And you know, it's amazing because we've been talking about, and when I say we, I mean the cyber community has been talking a great deal about medical identity theft for a number of years now. But it's not something that people automatically think about. And, you know, one of the ways to detect that you're having an issue with your medical information is when you get the explanation of benefit statements that come every time your insurance is used, for instance, for a medical visit, a treatment, prescriptions, things like that. And, I mean, I've had cases, in particular, a 72-year-old grandmother living in upstate New York was looking at her explanation of benefit statements. She's on Medicare, but she was still looking at it. And she noticed on the same day, on opposite sides of the country, one laboratory billed her for a pregnancy test and the other laboratory billed her for a sperm viability test. So, I mean, these are kind of the crazy things can happen. And medical identity theft, I mean, pure and simple, is when someone uses your personal identifiable information for the purpose of getting medical treatment or medical visits or any of that, or to crawl into your medical insurance, you're a victim of medical identity theft. And the problem when they crawl into your insurance is you could need a specific procedure, and you contact the medical institution or whatever. They contact your insurance company for the purpose of pre-certifying so that everybody knows it's going to get paid. There's no panic. And they're informed the procedure already happened. Hmm. I mean, one great story is a woman walked into the office of an administrator of a hospital, threw both legs up on his desk and said, "Do I look like a double amputee to you?" And that's just one case. There's a case of a psychiatrist in Boston who invented files for the purpose of doing Medicare fraud. And all of these people suddenly had files about them where it was talking about their treatment for various forms of mental illness that at some point could end up as part of some disclosure somewhere. And they knew nothing about it. And they were victims. And just the list goes on and on and on of all the different ways. And the way that Social Security numbers are gotten for many children, for instance, is in a hospital setting. When a child is born and you apply for a Social Security number, and then those Social Security numbers are used, there are people in hospitals, there are people in medical facilities, there are people in doctor's offices who basically steal those Social Security numbers for the purpose of committing a child identity theft. So there's so many things that are tied together.
What can somebody do with my Social Security number if it gets beyond my own control?
Oh, so many things, unfortunately. They can open new accounts in your name. They could file tax returns for the purpose of getting a refund, but in your name. They could commit a crime with a trail of breadcrumbs leading back to you. Medical identity theft. I mean, think of it. You could be lying on a stretcher outside an emergency room, and they give you a blood transfusion, but because someone has stolen your identity and used it for medical identity theft, and either the thief or the client of the thief has gone in and had an examination and their medical information gets mixed up with yours, suddenly blood types could change, allergies could disappear, new allergies could appear. Treatments could be prescribed based on the information in a medical file. Your life could be in jeopardy.
Adam, of the many sad stories that you tell in this book, and there is good news on the other side and things we can do, but the worst for me was the case where identity theft was like an inside job. A mother stole her own daughter's information and made a mess of her daughter's financial life.
Oh, you know, the tragedy is that this can happen within family units. It can happen with foster children. It does happen. 10% of foster children become victims of identity theft.
Wow.
Because their card with their information is passed on from foster home to foster home. So there's terrible exposure there. But we have countless stories of children being victimized by their parents. You know, perfect example, in the particular case you're referring to, her mother went out and opened all kinds of credit card accounts in her name and things like that. There are many situations where parents are in financial trouble, they have credit issues, they want to keep the lights on. So what they say is, you know, my child won't really care if I use their Social Security number for the purpose of having heat in the home, light in the home, and I'm going to pay it. And then suddenly they run into trouble. I had a friend who's... father, when he helped him get credit cards when he was going to college, his father decided to get a few credit cards for himself, ran up over $30,000 worth of debt, ruined my friend's credit. And I said to him, "What are you going to do about it?" He said, "It's my father. What am I going to do?" I'm not going to hurt him. And, you know, there are instances where people are willing to go to the police, but there are so many other instances where family members are not willing to, quote, rat out, unquote, a family member, and their credit is destroyed. And in some cases, I had an aunt whose son was basically doing things because he had stolen her identity, and she went bankrupt in order to protect him.
Well, and I know that you can put on your credit report, if there's a dispute about something or you need to make an explanation, you can say, well, you know, my identity was compromised or whatever. But who's going to believe that, right?
Well, you know, again, there are now procedures and everybody is much more alert to the issue, and credit reporting agencies have been much more flexible. And yes, you can put something in your account. You can also put a fraud alert on your account, which says to any prospective creditor, please absolutely confirm the identity of whoever the applicant is before you grant credit, because there's been an identity incident. You can also get a credit freeze where anyone, including you, has absolutely no access to your credit unless it's thawed by the use of a PIN or a password. And in the old days, it would take 3 days to freeze, 3 days to thaw. Now it's really almost instant. And you do it online. You do it through the credit reporting agencies. 47 states have passed laws allowing for the concept of credit freezes. And the reporting agencies gave up and said, well, you know, we're only three away, so we might as well do it ourselves. So they are in fact, making it easier to do a credit freeze. But a credit freeze only helps you if someone's attempting to open new accounts in your name. It won't help you with existing accounts if someone took over your credit card accounts and are using them or got access through your debit card to your bank account. It won't help you in cases of medical identity theft, criminal identity theft, tax fraud. I mean, it is an arrow for your quiver, but it is not the silver bullet.
I got a call a couple years ago at about 6 o'clock in the morning from my debit card company, and they had detected some fraudulent use and frozen the card. And it ended up costing me nothing, and it was great, and I felt very protected. But I realized it must have cost my card company something. What is the expense of all this fraud protection and recovery for businesses?
Billions. Billions. And, you know, of course, we're now in a new phase now where we have the, well, it was supposed to be the chip and PIN card. It is now the chip and signature card in the U.S. 133 countries have chip and PIN. For some reason, somebody felt that the American consumer wasn't smart enough to remember PIN numbers, or they would use the same PIN number universally. But the problem here is the chip card is definitely safer than the magnetic swipe card, even though you still have that strip on the back of your card. But there have already been some indications that there have been some spoofs of the chip card in Latin America, in addition to which there are scams right now where people are actually calling people because everyone is either anticipating receipt of their new chip card or they've received it because Visa and MasterCard said in November the liability will shift from the financial institution to the retailer if the retailer isn't using readers of chip cards. So, and, you know, there is a live. So the spoof is there was somebody would call you and say, Chris, we know that either you just got an EMV card, Europay, MasterCard, Visa, or you're about to get a card, and we just need some information from you to confirm who you are because we have to adjust your account.
And if I answer that, I've just given up my whole, all my information.
Yep.
Adam Levin is my guest. He's a consumer advocate and founder of Identity Theft 911. His new book is called Swiped: How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have lines open at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, with test preparation courses for graduate school admission, including the GRE, GMAT, and LSAT. smu.edu/test prep.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with consumer advocate Adam Levin, author of Swiped, How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. Join us at 1-800-933-5372 or email think at kera.org. So, Adam, one thing we ought to be doing is monitoring our information to make sure that everything about our identity looks as it should look. There are companies that offer to do this for a fee, but I'm always suspicious of somebody volunteering to sort of pry in my private business for money. Are they on the up and up?
No, there are a lot of them on the up and up. I mean, you always get a little frustrated when you say with a credit reporting agency, they're collecting my information and then they're selling it back to me
right.
in a different form through reporting or monitoring. But there are a variety of ways to monitor, and some are free, some are not. And it really is up to each individual consumer as to how you feel about what you're getting and what it's worth. First, you can go to annualcreditreport.com. That's the government-mandated site where you're entitled to a free copy of your credit report from each of the major credit reporting agencies once a year. Some people go every 4 months and get a different report as opposed to getting all three at one time because the agencies do not necessarily share all their information. Some of them have different subscribers, and it's not a bad idea to get a different snapshot at different times of the year. Some states mandate more than one time a year, and if you're a victim of identity theft, there's a whole different set of free credit reports that you're entitled to, and you just need to contact the credit reporting agencies to find out, you know, what they do under what circumstances. The second thing is you can have, there are a number of sites out there, like credit.com and others, where you can get a free copy. You can see a free overview of your credit as well as free scores that are updated monthly. With no obligation. Now, the reason why you want to do something like that is because if your credit score takes a sudden, unexplained drop, it could be a result of one of two things. Either you've been spending like a crazy person, and as a result, you've hit your credit limits, or you're a victim of identity theft. Now, I always say to people, when you look at your credit scores, and they are what they call consumer disclosure credit scores, think of them like the movie Pirates of the Caribbean. It's more like a guide than a code, guideline than a code. And that is because, you know, it gives you ranges and you know, it could be off by a few. We have to understand that, for instance, each of us has somewhere between 50 and 80 credit scores that are running simultaneously because lenders have a little bit different criteria. They do operate off the FICO model or the VantageScore model. Those are the two major scoring models. FICO is the more widely accepted of the two. But it's important to check your scores and see what's going on there. The third thing is you need to check your accounts on a daily basis, your credit and your bank account, even just for a couple of minutes. And the reason is that so many credit and debit cards have been stolen. And in the dark web, or on the dark web, or the deep web, or whichever web that you would like to think about that the criminals inhabit, they are sold by a variety of different criteria, one of which is zip code. And the reason is because the financial services monitoring institutions are looking for what they call out-of-pattern spending. And that's why you get the call, as you did, from your financial institution saying there's been some suspicious activity on your debit card. Now, if the zip code is the same as where you live, the number is roughly the same as what you would spend, or it's kind of where you work or where you normally shop, the bank system may miss it. But you won't, because you'll go, I wasn't there yesterday, even if it was just around the corner. If you want a little bit more of a laid-back approach, you can sign up for what's called transactional monitoring alerts that are offered by banks, credit card companies, and credit unions, which will notify you of any activity in your account. Now, some people go, well, I don't want to spend my entire life looking at my smartphone or my email for every single account I've ever done. But the truth, again, is you will notice things that banks won't. For instance, if someone does a 99-cent test charge to see whether or not it goes through before they really hit your credit card, it's better that you see it first and notify your financial institution. There are also scams out there. One in particular was a $9.84 scam where just about a million credit cards were charged $9.84 by a scammer. Because so many people glaze over charges that are small They don't even think about it. These guys were counting on the fact that people would miss it, and they would make a whole bunch of money, and then they would disappear by the time somebody figured out it was happening. And that was, in fact, the case. So you actually need to scrutinize either your online report or, you know, your report that comes to you each month from the bank to make absolutely sure that every transaction you see. Now, in reference to what you said about companies that will have more sophisticated, more expensive monitoring programs, they're out there. Some of them are very good. It needs to be more than just credit monitoring. And there are companies that have a combination credit monitoring, fraud monitoring. They also monitor anywhere from one credit reporting agency to all three major credit reporting agencies. They're not cheap. They also come with a variety of other things, including identity theft resolution services. Most of them are not great resolution services, but at least they're resolution services where you can get help from somebody if you have an incident. They could also come with reports involving sexual or child predators in the neighborhood. They could also be scanning your driver's license information, your medical information, just to make sure, you know, to report back to you when things happen. So it's not a bad idea to consider it, but what you need to do is look at it. Now, the Consumer Federation of America has a wonderful site called idtheftinfo.org. There, a number of the identity theft service providers, who also in many cases provide monitoring, credit monitoring services, have signed up for best practices, and they publish a list for people who of the questions you need to think about and the thoughts that need to run through your mind in general if you're considering an identity theft service provider and monitoring service. And it's an excellent idea to really go and look and think about it.
All right, let's go to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. We have Jennifer on the line in Dallas. Hi, Jennifer.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for the timely program for me. 3 or 4 years ago, I had a service dog, and I went down to the VA so he could help out the soldiers coming back from war. And you had to do a background check, including your fingerprints. This week, I got a letter from the government office of personnel management saying that not maybe, but in fact, my information had been stolen up into and including my fingerprints, and have signed me up on a 3-year ID experts group, as your guest was describing. And I've called all the credit cards, done all that, alerted everybody, got the new chip cards, etc. But I'm very concerned that with my fingerprints and the ID, presumed to be the definite ID of a person, that in the future it may just be like a really not good situation, and I don't know what to do proactively. I mean, I understand the monitoring and watching after something happens to you.
Well, Jennifer, I'm sorry that happened to you, and I'm sure Adam might have some ideas about where you can go from here.
Yeah. You know, first of all, anytime you're notified that you are part of a breach database and they offer you monitoring, take it. And, you know, ID Experts is a pretty good company when it comes to resolution if you have a problem. When I talk about in the book Swiped, and I'm going to talk about OPM in a minute, but when I talk in the book Swiped about the three M's, minimize your risk of exposure, monitor and manage the damage, there's also something else that you can do. And that is that many people don't realize that through their insurance company, a credit union, small bank, big banks like to charge big bucks for stuff, or the HR department where you work, they may well have a program available to you that may or may not help you monitor credit. It also will help you get through an identity incident. And in many cases, it's free as a perk of your relationship with the institution. For instance, it is in many homeowner policies and auto owner policies. In addition to which, it is part of employee assistance programs, actually where you work. It's so the key thing is to find out this. You call your insurance agent, your bank rep, the HR department where you work. You say, do you have an identity incident program, identity theft protection services, reimbursement program, whatever? Am I in it? If not, what do I need to do to get in it? Is it free? Is it minimally cost? Or is it expensive? And then you hear that, you can make a decision. Now, the OPM breach, to me, in light of all the breaches we've had, is the most heinous. And with the newest announcement from China that this wasn't an intelligence gathering thing, it was obviously somebody was a criminal, what that's really telling me is one of two things. Either the government's finished with all the intelligence information it was gathering and now they've turned it over to people who are going to sell it in the black market, or somewhere there's a loose affiliation with criminal organizations and they're going to sell it. So to me, it's even a bigger problem than just people worried about the fact that they got their most intimate details through the background checks for security clearances and Social Security numbers and fingerprints. And the problem is, when they have all that, fingerprints, Social Security number, all of that sensitive and intimate data that you had to give them as part of a background check, you're a target for blackmail, extortion, and every form of identity theft possible. So that means you really have to step up your game, regardless of whatever they give you and say they give you. The minute your Social Security number is in the hands of someone else, they have an option on your life, and you're going to have to look over your shoulder for the rest of your life, and you have to be really careful. Now, if I could just suggest some of the things. For instance, never carry your Social Security card in your purse or wallet, or that of your children, although in the case of Jennifer, unfortunately, they already have your Social Security number. Covet your information. Never give your information to somebody who contacts you and then asks you to verify or authenticate you. If your bank calls, for instance, and says, we've seen some suspicious activity in your account, can you confirm these transactions? That's good. That's okay. But if someone calls you and says, Jennifer or Chris, hey, is this your credit card number? Why, yes, it is. Is this your expiration date? Why, yes, it is. Look, just to confirm you're you, could you flip over your card and give me your security code? Hang up. Because we've seen cases where they've not only done that, but they've gone one step further and said, you know, you are a victim of identity theft, and therefore we need your Social Security number as well, just because we really, really want to make sure you're not the identity thief, that you're really Chris or Jennifer. You need to secure any device you operate on, whether it's your smartphone, because remember, your smartphone is a data collection device and storage device as well as a communication device, your computer, your iPad, with the most up-to-date security software, as well as making sure that it's updated. Because having security software that's not updated is like, in my case, being a member of a gym but never showing up. Sounds great, doesn't help you. You need to shred. The passwords you use have to be long and strong wherever you use them. They can't be password. They can't be 123456, which was the case in the Ashley Madison breach for a lot of people, or Ashley. Also, you cannot and must not share your passwords across your entire universe of sites, retail, social networking, financial services, email. Don't do that, because if you're breached in one place, you're breached in every place. And also remember that any time you make a change in your passwords or your login information on any site, what happens? It all goes back. The confirmation of that change goes back to your email. So anytime you change any password, even if you have different passwords, change every password. Now, some people go, I can't remember all these passwords. There are password management programs. Some of them are good. Some of them aren't. Some of them have been breached. Many of them haven't. But you can also come up with a system, which is you pick a phrase. You take the first letter of each word of the phrase. It's got to be your favorite phrase, your favorite lyric, but just make sure you're the one that knows it and none of the people you know knows that that's your favorite lyric. And then that's your core of your password. Then put a couple letters from whatever site you're visiting in front or in back, and then put a couple numbers either in front or in back and change them frequently. You can also consider a credit freeze, which we discussed. And in Jennifer's case, she may really want to put a credit freeze on her accounts, but then she should also be monitoring. She should be looking at the explanation of benefit statements that she gets from her doctor or any medical provider she uses. You need to check accounts, and you need to consider really sophisticated monitoring programs. And the key thing is find out from ID experts specifically what kind of monitoring they're doing for you, and make sure you sign up for everything that you're entitled to. Because in some of these breaches, some of the breach service providers have Byzantine systems where you have to, they claim you're covered, but you really need to find out if you want monitoring specifically what you sign up for, things like that.
All right, back to the phones now. We have Kyle on the line in Euless. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I wanted to talk about the credit freeze because I've done that for many years, and I firmly believe it. But the one thing I never hear anybody talk about anytime I listen to programs like this is that there's some challenges behind the credit freezes. For example, here in Texas, you have to pay in order to freeze your credit. And if you want to unfreeze your credit, you have to pay again.
What do you know about that, Adam?
That's actually very true. Very true. Now, if you're a senior citizen, most states, you pay a minimal fee. I think the average, and Kyle, I don't know your experience, but it's somewhere $10, $15 to freeze, and then an equivalent amount to unfreeze. There is no question. A credit freeze is obviously more expensive than a fraud alert. You pay nothing for a fraud alert, but a fraud alert is not as comprehensive as a credit freeze, and it's a little cumbersome because, remember, you could forget to unfreeze, be in a store, and not remember login information or whatever and forget your password and you haven't thought it and they won't let you do anything. So it is more cumbersome and it is not cheap. But compared to the agony you go through when people open new accounts in your name, it may well be worth the investment.
Consumer advocate Adam Levin is my guest. He's founder of Identity Theft 911. His new book is called Swiped: How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. We'll resume our conversation in a couple of minutes. You can join it by calling 1-800-933-5372, or you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education, with test preparation courses for graduate school admission, including the GRE, GMAT, and LSAT. smu.edu/test prep.
This is Think on KERA. I'm Chris Boyd, speaking this hour with the author of Swiped: How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. Adam Levin is a consumer advocate and founder of Identity Theft 911. You can join us by emailing think@kera.org, which is where we hear from Gailey in Allen, who wants to know, is PayPal safer to use than a credit or debit card for making online transactions?
From my understanding, it is equally or better than. And because, again, it's all based on a tokenization system. And we're ultimately going to tokenization when it comes to online transactions, where the merchant will actually simply get a confirmation of the transaction, but the processing information will be, the personal identifying information will remain with the processor, which is, I think, important. And this actually brings up something else for everyone, and that is, if you're shopping online, first of all, your chip and PIN card isn't going to help you because you still have to give your information as to the credit card number, the expiration date, and the security code for most people. And I also tell people, use a credit card, not a debit card, when you shop online. Try also to isolate one credit card when you shop online. So if it's compromised, you can limit the damage. You know what it is. You can change things quickly, and your other credit cards can be there to replace it while you're waiting for a replacement. But the reason why a credit card as opposed to a debit card is fraud protections are better. Liability is lower, even though debit cards are moving in the right direction. But a debit card, again, is your gateway to your bank account. With a credit card, it's their money. With a debit card, it's your money. Hmm. And even if the bank says, you're absolutely right, you're a victim of fraud, we're going to return the money, some banks don't return the money for a few days. And if that's money you needed for gas or groceries or rent or mortgage or tuition, you could end up with a late payment. You could end up with a lot of explaining to do, and you don't want to do that. So use credit cards as opposed to debit cards online.
Adam, some websites allow us to store our card information. Is that any more or less secure than typing it in fresh every time you want to make a purchase with one particular organization?
Well, being that I have a tendency to be a bit more paranoid than most, just like I say, you know, when people get these apps, and especially they get apps on their smartphones, and they have the option of saving their user ID or their password or both,
yeah.
I always say to people, take a few extra minutes to actually type in the information. Why make it easier? Now, there are a number of sites that are very good and very secure. But again, the real issue here is that scammers and hackers are so good at what they do. They're so sophisticated. They're so creative. They're so persistent. They always find a way in, unfortunately. And remember, if you're a website or a business or the government, you can do everything right. But you have to do everything right. Whereas if you're an intruder, you only need to find one point of weakness. And the problem has been with many organizations, they're fairly secure. Unfortunately, many aren't. As we saw with APM, it was a disaster. But as a company, you can do everything right. One person makes a mistake, and people tend to be the weakest link in any security system. So one of the ways just to be just safer is, yeah, take the extra minute or two. I always worry about when convenience trumps security, you're exposed. You can't afford to be exposed in the world we live in.
All right, I want to shift our focus here to social media. You may have seen this. There was a quiz making the rounds a couple of weeks ago on Facebook that promised to make a little infographic of the most common words people posted on Facebook. I looked at that and I realized people are granting some random app and whoever created it access to incredible amounts of data about their personal life that they wouldn't necessarily friend a stranger and allow access to. And all you get is this little thing that tells you that you posted the word family 212 times or whatever.
I know. In fact, I wrote an article about it recently. And yeah, I mean, you know, again, they talk about the different ways that they secure it and that it doesn't reside on servers and doesn't do all this stuff. And of course, again, you never know. You just never know. Social networking is a particularly dangerous thing. And as you know, people have this tendency to share every shred of information. There is an unquenchable thirst. You have to take pictures. Now, Facebook tends to scramble geotagging, and that's that little code in the picture that effectively tells somebody where it was taken.
Right.
But a lot of social networking sites don't. And, you know, a lot of people say, here's little Susie. She's 2 years old. We're at the park. We're celebrating her birthday. Somebody could look at that and say, oh, she's two. I know her name. I know the park now because I looked at the photograph. I'm going to go up to Susie and make her think that mommy sent me over to pick her up. The other thing is that people love to take pictures of, this is my new car. This is my new stereo. This is my new piece of art. And they forget that their picture is geotagged and someone is sitting there going, well, this is great because now I know what I want to steal. And more importantly, I know how I can get an idea of how big it is so I can figure out what I need to drive over there and actually cart it away. Plus, on social networking, people have a tendency to say, I'm going away tomorrow and I'm going to be gone for X number of days
right.
and I'll be back on whatever and I'm so excited. And then they're on the trip. They're sending pictures. They're sharing experiences. Just remember one thing. When you're telling people where you are, you're also telling people where you're not. And burglars, stalkers, they're very interested in stuff like this. Plus, with quizzes, people answer these quiz questions and they don't realize that a lot of the answers are the same answers that they give to security questions on different websites that authenticate themselves.
Huh.
And so, as a result, you know, we all think it's cute and it's fun and isn't it great, and we don't realize we're giving our lives away. Example, you remember the Apple Nudegate celebrity scandal? Well, what happened there is there was so much information out there about celebrities that the people who were looking to hack the information and then give it to sell it to websites or whatever, these folks, all they needed to do was sit back, read all the stuff, follow it, and then they would say, now, what might this person's email address be, or what might their password be? And of course, so many people use really dumb passwords or passwords that draw upon life experiences, life events, the street they were live on, their favorite color, their favorite band, their dog's name, the date they were born, the date they got married. And hackers, scammers, these guys are smart. They spent a lot of time studying this stuff. You remember, each of us has a day job. But for a hacker and an identity thief, we are their day job. There is a huge pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So they're going to be very, very resourceful. They're going to be very, very persistent. They're going to study us. And every piece of information that we provide somewhere is another piece of the mosaic that once they put it together, they've got us.
All right. There are also those people, Adam, who have really done nothing to invite the whole world knowing their information. And you tell the story of Alex from Target, this nice kid from Frisco here in North Texas, had his life turned upside down without doing anything to invite his overnight viral stardom.
That's tough when you're a good-looking young kid. And you get somebody who thinks they'd love to take a picture of you and share it with the world, and that's what happens. And that's why we have to understand that we are exposed. Example, as we talked about in the OPM situation, nice lady, what is she? All she wants to do is share her service dog with the VA.
Right.
She goes down, she registers, she goes through a background check, does everything right. And all of a sudden, they get breached. And that's the real problem, is that you can do everything right, as I said earlier, everything right, but be on the wrong database at the wrong moment. There's a breach, and all of a sudden, you didn't want to be a celebrity. You don't want to be a Kardashian. But remember one thing, to an identity thief, each and every one of us is a Kardashian because of how they can ultimately benefit. So they will take an innocent situation like this picture that became a tweet that went viral, and they can turn it into something that becomes a nightmare for the person who did nothing other than they were just there.
Hmm. All right, we have an email here from Don who writes, I recently received an email message that my credit card may have been compromised as a result of a data breach. The breach is legitimate in that it was also posted on my credit card webpage. When such a data breach occurs, does a consumer have the right under either state or federal law to know the name of the merchant with the problem?
You know, it's very interesting. That hasn't happened, and banks tend not to tell. Although the fact is that when merchants have a problem, generally it ends up in the press anyway because somebody also gets a notification from the merchant. So, you know, the truth is that under breach notification laws, if you're breached and if you have a database, depending upon the size of your database and also the requirements of the particular state. Now, here's where we get into this huge morass. I have been in favor of a national breach notification law, which is a floor, because many states have breach notification laws that are very strong. And as you know, in Washington, they can't agree on the day of the week. And when they pass something, it's such a watered-down piece of garbage that it really almost does nothing. And states are terrified, especially the states that have worked really hard to have good data security laws and good breach notification laws, that Washington will end up nullifying their laws. But we have a Byzantine system right now in this country of breach notification because you have 47 different jurisdictions out of the 50 that actually have breach notification laws, and most of the breach notification laws are different from each other. So businesses have to figure out how to comply with this. You know, the original breach occurred was that we all heard about was ChoicePoint, and they were in Georgia, and that was the first real meaningful breach that folks heard about. But in those days, the only state that really had a breach notification law was California. So ChoicePoint wasn't even required to tell the people in Georgia that they had had a breach. So 38 attorney general got together, and they ultimately pressured them to disclose all of the information. But that's why we need to have much greater clarity with our breach notification laws and to have greater unity and standardization of these laws so everybody plays by the same rules and consumers get to find out what the problem is, who caused the problem, what they need to look for, because we never seem to have enough information to know how to protect ourselves because we can't figure out where it came from, how it happened. We can't put the pieces together.
Adam, is there something that everybody else you know does online or with their data that you absolutely won't do? Like, are you not on social media? Are you not willing to use a credit card online? Can you talk about that?
Well, see, in my case, I'm a little lucky because I have a big company standing behind me. If I have a problem, they'll take care of it. Mm-hmm. But I generally don't save credit card information online. I will use a credit card online. I try to isolate the credit card that I do use online. A lot of people have a tendency to use all sorts of different credit cards in all sorts of different environments, and then they have to worry about their entire inventory of credit cards. I will not authenticate myself to someone that contacts me. I always say to people, never authenticate yourself unless you're in control of the conversation. Either you've gone to a specific website and you know who they are, and you want to do something and they need to authenticate you, or you get a phone call because they're asking you for information, and do not authenticate yourself. And I will not authenticate myself. When I get an email that says click on a link, I will not click on that link because I'm worried about either it's going to attempt to put malware on my computer, or it's going to whisk me off to some site that looks really, really authentic and is going to ask me for information that I don't really want to give. Also, I don't give a Social Security number when I go to a doctor's office. I say to them, you have my insurance information, and in most cases, I can't escape your office without giving you a credit card. So no, I'm not going to give you. And they go, well, we need it for reimbursement. I say, no, you don't. You have the insurance information. They say, well, if you die, we need it because we need it for your death certificate. I said, well, first of all, I don't intend to die. But secondly, if I do die, call my lawyer. Call my wife. They have my Social Security number. So, you know, these are the kinds of things that you need to do. You really have to be alert, and you have to say to yourself, if anybody asks you for any, I don't do quizzes. I don't post every place I'm going to go anywhere at all. I get nervous when anybody posts it. When somebody tags me in a picture, I kind of go, do me a favor, please don't tag me. I just think it's best to stay below the radar on a lot of this. And again, but I realize I'm on databases because I've done business with different organizations. And as a result, at some point, I'm going to be a victim. I have had credit card compromise. Thank God I haven't had other incidents. But I'm always on the lookout because I just know it's inevitable.
Adam Levin is a consumer advocate and founder of Identity Theft 911. His new book is called Swiped: How to Protect Yourself in a World Full of Scammers, Phishers, and Identity Thieves. Adam, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you for making this time for us.
And thank you so much for inviting me. This was great fun.
Think is produced by Stephen Becker and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Lindsay Connect is associate producer and Jeff Whittington is executive producer. I'm on Twitter at Chris Boyd Think. The show's email address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.